you really appreciate what you're missing. And I just want to say, and I'm sure everybody's thinking it, I can't wait to see everybody again. Now, I don't feel the same way about work. I don't feel the same way about my job. Like, I can't wait to get back to work. But there's something special about each and every one of you that just you don't realize what you've got until it's gone. So grateful for the time God allows for us to be back together and be able to worship together and hear all of you guys sing and hear my kids sing. They're at home. So just so much joy that is missed when you're not here. And we'll be excited to share that with you again. Look, people have said it 100 times. I mean, things are weird right now. I got some pictures I'll put up on the screen. I mean, you think about how close you used to get to people, and now that you're supposed to be at least 6 feet away, and maybe you're supposed to be even further, you don't appreciate how much you end up like going up and hugging people or shaking people's hand. And now, when you see someone, you just look at them like, I don't know. You take a step back, and it's definitely strange. I mean, you think about businesses and marketing and all the signs and advertisements of people trying to drive you to their business, and now you go down the road and you see all these signs, and all these signs are like, hey, stay away from our business, and, you know, stay home and don't come here. Just amazing to think about all the shuttering of doors and stores that people just, I mean, you're circling the parking lot to find a space, and now they're just, they don't even want you there. I mean, you think about the stuff that people are wearing now. Now, I still don't have a mask, and my mother's threatened to mail me one, but people are wearing masks and gloves and all these things and makeshift bandanas, and it's funny when you really just look at people. I mean, y'all used to spend an hour getting ready every morning, and now you go out and you don't care what you got strapped to your face and what you got on your hands. It's just the weirdest thing to see strong, grown, tough men acting like they're afraid to touch a box of cereal. So, I mean, it's just wild. And then hand sanitizer. Look, I mean, you know who you are. Three of y'all here at the church who have always used hand sanitizer, and now I don't know what's going to happen when we get back to church. I mean, they're going to have that stuff everywhere, people using that. But what has happened is you look at these four images, why are people doing this? Like what has happened to cause such unique, weird, strange behaviors? And we're talking almost universally here. Like, everybody's doing this. Now, what is the reason at the heart of why people in a month would go from not even knowing the phrase social distancing to just distrusting everything and everyone? Well, here's a reason for you, and I'll put it on the screen. Ultimately, it's this fact. People are afraid to die. People don't want to die. People don't want to get sick, but it's not that they're just concerned about getting sick, because we get colds all the time. I mean, you come to church and you hear people coughing across the pews, and you see people and you know they're sick and a runny nose, and kids have got a runny nose, and you're okay with it. You're hugging them, you're touching them, you're being with them. But when it comes to this thing, you'll have grown men running away from you like you got leprosy. And here's why. People are scared they're going to die. And why is that? Why is everybody scared that they're going to die? Well, I mean, it really is the most scary thing, isn't it? I mean, it's everybody. I mean, even our kids, as they're offering their prayers, they're like, oh, I pray we don't get the coronavirus. Pray we don't get sick. But I want to share something with you this morning that should be for Christians just the most exciting, great thing. And the passage that we're going to study this morning is from Hebrews chapter 2. And I'll have it on the screen here if you want to read it. And it says, therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself, speaking of Jesus, likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives. Something happened with Jesus Christ when he came to this earth and he died and he rose again. And it's something that, yes, it happened to Jesus, and we think about Jesus and we remember Jesus and we talk about Jesus, but it's something that he gave you, this freedom from the fear of death, that I want to talk to you about this morning, and the lesson that I've titled the defeat of death, because that's ultimately what Jesus did. Jesus took our greatest enemy in his life and he destroyed it. And in defeating death, we inherit a mindset and character and resolve and hope that lead us through the darkest times in this world, and we're just impervious to the kind of mentality that the world can adopt in times like this of just abject fear of everyone and everything. A Christian is victorious because Jesus has defeated death. So I want to talk about that this morning. And I want to say this at the outset. I know it's Easter, and we usually have two things going in our brains at Easter. The first is this. There's nothing in the Bible that elevates the day of Easter, Passover, Jesus' resurrection, above any other day on a religious level. God didn't say, like, oh, I want you to come Sunday and then the next Sunday, but then this Sunday, this is the real Sunday that if you don't come, like, you're all going to go to hell. Like, this, there's nothing in the Bible that I can say to compel you to think of this day as higher than anything else. Jesus didn't set it up that way. We take communion every first day of the week and remember his death, and that's literally the one thing Jesus asked us to do. He asked us to do this in remembrance of him, and his disciples did that, the church did that, and we, thousands of years later, I mean, we do the same thing. And so we honor Jesus' memory by doing what he asked. But then there's the other part of me, and this is what's special about Easter. It's like, you know, this is when the day Jesus rose from the dead. And we know that because Easter is tied to the Jewish Passover calendar. And, you know, if I ask you when Halloween is, or I ask you when New Year's Day is, they all have the same date, right? It's October 31st. It's January 1st. But if I ask you what day Easter is, you're going to have to Google it because it changes. And that's because it's tied specifically to the Jewish calendar, which doesn't line up with ours, and it makes the date different every year. And so sometimes it's in March, sometimes it's in April, but it's always going to fall on a Sunday, the first day of the week, because that's the day that Jesus rose from the dead, there coinciding with Passover. And knowing that fact, I mean, if you're a Christian, you can't help but think about it, and you can't help but want to talk about it. I mean, when I think about the silly things that we celebrate, you know, like work anniversaries, I got a note at my work email that so-and-so at work celebrating their 13th work anniversary. Like, I'm supposed to get excited about that. Like, happy 13 years here in slavery at AT&T. Or am I supposed to look at my own birthday and be like, oh, this is the greatest day ever. I mean, everybody sends you something on your birthday. I mean, I'm a member of the Smith & Wesson gun forums, and I forget that I'm even a member of that, and they'll send me a birthday, like, happy birthday. Are we supposed to celebrate every small milestone, but then ignore the day that Jesus rose from the dead? So I tend to have a lesson around that fact, not that there's anything required of it, but knowing that, this is a special day, and I do like to talk about it, even though there's nothing required that I'm making you do, or you're not missing out on anything. It's just good to remember this day, simply because so many special things happened. And the one I want to talk to you about today is this. Jesus destroyed the thing that we as people fear the most. And I want to talk to you about that passage from Hebrews chapter 2, and we'll look at some other passages, of course, as I got my Bible. And I want to talk to you about three ways that what Jesus did has such a profound effect on you and I that hopefully after we reflect on it, it'll be beneficial for us to have been together, however virtually today. And after the lesson, I think Matt's going to have one more song, and then we'll have a closing prayer. But the first point I want to make to you this morning is this. Jesus destroyed the power of death. All right, Jesus destroyed the power of death. I got a quote on the left from John chapter 11, verse 53. And if you remember John 11, it's the story of Lazarus and Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And he had done a number of miracles, but here this particular miracle was just setting the Jews off. And he'd been dead a while, people had been mourning, and here Lazarus comes out of the tomb and they open it up and he comes forth and everybody's just exclaiming like, oh man, this is amazing. And of course the Jews hated Jesus. And the Jews, they weren't excited at all, at least the Pharisees and those who were against him. And so what could they do to stop Jesus? Like if you wanted to just have Jesus minimized, if you don't want people following Jesus, if you want to be the religious leaders, what are you going to do? And let me tell you what they did. They did the one thing that would shut someone up once and for all. They said in John 11, 53, from that day on, they made plans to put him to death. And so, why would they put Jesus to death? They weren't going to take out an ad in the paper and run him down. They weren't going to just ignore him or Jesus will go away. They did, in their mind, the one thing that they thought they could do to just forever silence Jesus. They were just going to kill him. And it's not just Jesus, right? Death serves as all of our greatest enemies. I mean, you've got plans and you've got dreams and you've got goals in life that you want to accomplish and you want to grow up, you want to get married, you want to have children. If you've already got those, you want to retire and you want to be able to go, maybe move and travel the country. There's a lot of things that we want to do, and there's always one thing that could stop us from doing that. And it's death. It's the one thing that all of us kind of have in the back of our mind that we're not going to be able to beat and we're not going to be able to overcome. And it's not just a fate that poor people have to deal with. It's not a fate that old people have to deal with. It's something that affects every single person, man, woman, and child. That whenever you think, oh, I'm going to be able to do whatever, death is always right there to say, well, no, you're not. And just when you think, like, oh, man, I'm going to be able to do, then we're reminded of our own mortality, whether through a car accident or some other thing that happens, a hidden disease that's ravaging our body and we're unaware of it. Whatever it is, right, death is there to kind of take us down a notch. And so when we think about what Jesus did, Jesus died. Okay, Jesus died. Jesus didn't come down to the earth and say, hey, I'm gonna help y'all out and I'm gonna give you a bunch of things to read and I'm gonna flee this earth and I'm gonna head to heaven and just kind of leave you with it. It wasn't Jesus at all. Jesus said, I want to come experience this with you. And I'm gonna get onto the trenches of this warfare that you've got with death, and I'm gonna go behind the enemy lines here. And I'm going to die. And in doing that, you might think, well, Jesus, you lost too. That's what the Jews thought. They thought they were going to put him to death. And in putting him to death, their troubles were going to be over. But let me tell you what happened. Jesus rose from the dead. And in rising from the dead, I mean, just imagine him. And you got to symbolically think of it this way. I mean, he's shackled. He's chained. He's physically in a tomb, right? He's there. He's not going anywhere. And when you die, that's what happens, right? You're over. You're done with. There's nothing more for you. And yet there's Jesus doing the unthinkable. He's coming back from the dead, never to die again. Like he destroyed it. And it's unique, and I want to make sure we understand this in a couple ways. Number one, it's different than the resurrection of Lazarus or some of the other people that we read about in the Bible. Lazarus rose from the dead again, and just like they planned to put Jesus to death, you can read in John 2, they wanted to put Lazarus to death. They're like, oh, Jesus rose him from the dead. All right, well, let's kill him again. Maybe he'll stay dead. And let me tell you what happened. Lazarus did die. I don't know when, I don't know how, but I know he did. And in dying, Lazarus is still dead. Anybody that has been benefited by Jesus, whether through healing or being raised from the dead, they all died again at some point, even though they were miraculously healed by Jesus. Jesus is the firstborn from the dead. He's the first one to die, but then to be raised to life forevermore. And he wasn't dying again. He was freed from that. And in that moment, he destroyed the power of death to capture all of us and to hold us hostage, really, to everything that we love and cherish and hold dear. I want to make this one point before we move on that is just so important for us in this day and age to appreciate. Look, I know everybody is afraid of catching whatever's out there, and you don't want to get it, and if you do get it, you know, you're probably going to be fine, but you keep hearing stories in the news that they're pushing out to you, that, oh, you know, somebody got it and they died, and a young person got it and they died, and here's this famous singer or author or whoever, and they got it and they died, and you feel like, maybe being as a Christian, Jesus is going to help me. Jesus is going to help me in this situation where if I pray to Jesus, I'm not going to get sick. And if I do get sick, then Jesus is going to prevent me from dying, and he's going to help me get better. And invariably, you read a news story, that's the sentiment that you see. Someone's got this, and you go read the comments, and half the comments are saying this, well, I'm going to pray for their recovery and that they'll get better. And then the other half are like, yeah, well, if you believe in God, why is God allowing all this stuff to happen in his world? Everybody's dying from this, and if there was a God, God wouldn't allow all this. Let me explain this. Again, I feel like I have to explain it all the time. And not to you, you guys get it. But I wish someone from CNN was listening to me right now. Jesus didn't come to destroy death in the sense of he's eliminating that as an option that happens to people at the end of our lives. Jesus didn't come to make it where all Christians, you're never going to die, and the non-Christians, the rest of y'all, are going to keep on dying. Let me make this clear. Christians die as much as non-Christians die. And that is this. 100% of Christians are going to die. And 100% of non-Christians are going to die. We're all going to die. I don't care how many of you get better, how many of you avoid it. You're dying. Christians are dying. But here's the difference. When Jesus destroyed the power of death, he didn't destroy the fact that we're going to die. He didn't make it where we could avoid death. He made it where the permanence of death, and that's really what it is. It is a final state of being. He destroyed its power to hold us and keep us there. That's the great thing about Christianity. Not that we have a greater chance of not dying, or that we're going to live exponentially longer than non-Christians. We're all dying. Jesus died. But where the beauty comes in is that we're not staying dead. That's the power of death, the hold that death has on us. We're going to sleep, and we're going to get up. Jesus destroyed, number one, the power of death. Secondly, as it goes hand in hand with this, what Jesus freed us from, according to Hebrews chapter 2 that we read, Jesus freed us from the fear of death. He said, we have been in bondage or slavery to the fear of death all our lives. And this is true. I mean, people in general are afraid of dying, and it leads us to do a number of things. And yet, when you appreciate what Jesus did in his resurrection, when you appreciate what death means to a Christian, you can have statements like this. I've got on the screen Acts chapter 21 and verse 13. Paul answered, what are you doing weeping and breaking my heart? For I am ready not only to be imprisoned, but even to die in Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus. Now, you remember the circumstances Paul quotes this. It had been prophesied that if you go back to Jerusalem, Bad things are going to happen to you. You're going to be imprisoned. And what's Paul's mentality? I mean, think about this. If someone told you, all right, look, if you go to the store today, you go down to Ingles, here's what's going to happen. You're going to catch the bug, and you're going to end up in the hospital. What would you do? I mean, we're not talking like maybe or whatever. Like, it is a fact and a certainty that if you go here, X is going to happen. What would you do? I'm probably staying home. Right? Well, I don't want to subject myself to that sort of thing. Right? We're afraid of dying. And we're afraid of dying because, you know, we don't want all that comes along with it. I don't want my life to be over. I don't want all this stuff. And this is from the world's perspective. And the fear of death leads them to this lifetime of bondage and slavery. Let me describe this for you. How many people spend a bunch of money going to the doctor? Well, that show of hands here. Oh, I'm the only one, huh? Well, yeah, no, we spend a bunch of money going to the doctor. How many of you spend a bunch of money on vitamins, minerals, essential oils? A lot of money on that. Why do we do that? Why do we spend how many hours exercising, working out, taking care of our body and doing all these sorts of things? Why do we do that? Because I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And that leads us to this fear of, well, I got to continue to have these checkups. I got to continue to take care of my body. I got to continue to stay in shape. I got to do this, that, and the other. And we go to such lengths to protect and take care of ourselves just as a world. And that epitomizes this fear that we all have. And yet here's a Christian, Paul, freed by Jesus from the fear of death. And they tell him, hey man, if you go to Jerusalem, you're going to be captured. And notice what he says again. I'm ready not only to be imprisoned, but even to die in Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus. Think about that. If death is man's greatest enemy, then Jesus rescued us from our greatest fear, that somehow we're going to lose our lives. And Jesus stole all of that fear and took away. He freed us from that bondage to where in my life, I don't have the same mentality, the same worry, the same concern that everybody else has. Because Christians have been freed from it. Notice what I have in point number three here. Christians can live a life that is bold and unafraid. I'm not worried about it. And that allowed people like Paul to say, where are we going, to Rome? Oh, I'm probably going to die there? All right, let's go. Because it's no longer a place of permanence. And because Jesus destroyed the power of death, that is the complete permanence and eternal nature of death from man's perspective, because Jesus broke those bonds, then he freed my mind to where I'm not enslaved to fear and worry about what's going to happen to me, because I know what's going to happen to me. Jesus has already taken care of that. And so my life in this age can be lived differently because I'm no longer concerned and worried about what's coming next. I got a passage I want us to read in Philippians chapter 1, verses 21, if you got your Bibles and want to turn there. Notice what Paul said about his approach to his own life. And in verse 21, he says, for to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But I live on, if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell. For I'm hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. Now, I want you to think about, you know those verses. Think about how weird they are if you heard someone telling you this in this life. You know what would be really good right now? For me to die. That would be gain. For me to live, I'm going to live for Jesus. But if I die, things are better. And you're like, wait, what did you say? Oh, no, it would be good if I died. What? And notice how he explains it. I'm hard-pressed between the two. Between what? I'm hard-pressed between living and dying. I don't know. I don't know which one's better. I mean, it'd be good if I'm here because then I can help you guys. But then he goes on to explain it by saying, look, if I left right now, I'd be with Christ, which is far better. I mean, isn't that amazing? It has always shocked me, especially as a young man, when I would hear an older person at the end of their life, a grandparent, someone that's old, say things like, I want to go home. Because I remember thinking as a 9-year-old, as a 12-year-old, why would anybody say they're ready to leave? Because what they're saying is they're ready to die. I'm just ready to die. They're ready to die because a Christian knows that death is not something that's to be feared like people of the world fear death. It's not just a sorrowful state that all of us are going to end up in and like, oh, there's the permanent resting place of this person. We know we're going on. And when we know we're going on, a lot of good things are going to happen. I'm going to go be with the Lord. I'm going to be with Christ. But then I'm going to see all those other people that I've formed relationships with, that I've grown to love, that have also followed Christ. And so we're all going to be together. So I'm going to go see my family. I'm going to go see Jesus. I'm going to go see all these people. And that's how Paul can make these wild statements like, yeah, it's better if I die because Jesus freed us from the fear of death. All right, third, not only did Jesus free us from the fear of death, but Hebrews 2 talks about how Jesus tasted death for each one of us. All right, Jesus died for you and I. I've got a quote from Matthew 27, verse 46, where here it is, crucifixion. It says, about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? My God, why have you forsaken me? I want you to think about what it means when it says that through death, that he shared in the same flesh and blood, that Jesus died for you and I. In verse 17 of Hebrews 2, in all things he had to be made like his brethren. Verse 18 of Hebrews 2, for in that he himself has suffered. Let me explain to you what Jesus did. Okay, Jesus tasted death for all of us. I want you to reflect for a minute about the life of Jesus. Jesus knew a life of poverty. I know people that are listening to me right now have far different levels of financial ability. Some of you are poor and you don't know where the next meal is going to come from. Some of you are well off, and any amount in between. Let me tell you about the life of Jesus, all right? He wasn't born to some aristocratic family, and he didn't live in some fancy palace, and he didn't spend his life being fed the finest things and sharing in the finest things this life had to offer. Right? He was born in a manger, which we know. The scriptures tell us he took on the form of a servant. And there was nothing about his life, from his physical appearance to his clothes to his possessions, that drew anybody to him. No one saw Jesus as a superstar from the world's appearance. As a matter of fact, they looked at him like, who are you that we should take any teaching from you? And Jesus experienced not the best that life had to offer, but the worst. He said, look, even foxes have holes. Birds of the air have nests. But the Son of Man, I got nowhere to lay my head. Are you sure you want to follow me? And that was the life of Jesus. Not only did he know poverty, but he knew rejection. It's not that Jesus went out and found that everybody loved Jesus, and he was universally acclaimed and accepted. You think about somebody like Mr. Rogers or somebody else that people just, everybody universally just liked. Jesus wasn't that way. And it was because, well, Jesus didn't always just have positive things to say about people. When Jesus saw injustice, when Jesus saw error, false teaching, immorality, Jesus called it out. And if you were on the receiving end of Jesus' stern rebukes, it wasn't always endearing to people. And people didn't like what Jesus had to say. And so it wasn't that Jesus came down, and even though he lived a life of poverty, he was just widely accepted by everyone. At the very end of his life, he was rejected by even those closest to him, where his disciples fled even there at the end. Third, Jesus knew family disappointments. His own brothers, it said, didn't believe in him. And some of those things got better over time. But you know, if family strife is a part of your existence, it's not a fun thing. To have your family questioning you, to not be there to support you, Jesus knew that. And he knew the disappointment that came from doubters, even from those in his hometown. And Jesus knew betrayal. So we've studied about Judas and how his last night unfolded. Jesus knew the most intimate relationships could be turned on him for some small financial gain. If you have been betrayed by a friend or someone close to you, guess what? Jesus knew that too. And finally, Jesus knew pain. I know there are many of you that deal with constant pain. You deal with back pain, you deal with just your body hurting from arthritis and all sorts of things. You deal with the miseries of life. And you look at Jesus and you're like, well, I'm sure Jesus didn't know pain. Let me tell you, you go read the last few hours of the life of Jesus, he experienced the most brutal kind of pain that, I'm telling you, nobody here that is listening to me has experienced. I mean, the flesh being ripped off his body, the beatings, the thirst, the being hung on a cross. I mean, all of those things that Jesus experienced were brutal. And ultimately, he didn't just go through pain and then take some medicine and feel better. There was no cure for this. And that's why finally he looked to God and said, God, why have you forsaken me? And he was left here not only to experience all of these negative things of life, but then to die. And to experience that final moment when our spirit leaves our body and all of life's negative things have culminated in this one moment where we finally just can't go a second longer. Jesus experienced that. He did it. He came and he died. And he tasted death, it says, for every person. And here's why. He tasted death so that he could destroy it. Jesus tasted death so that he could go in there and in that moment destroy the power and the finality of death. The fourth and final point I want to make to you this morning is this. Jesus is going to destroy death once and for all. I got a quote from 1 Corinthians 15. A passage there. And if you want to turn there in your Bible, we'll read a few verses from 1 Corinthians 15. But verse 26 simply says that the last enemy to be destroyed is death. And, I mean, we've talked about Jesus this morning, and he led the way for us, so to speak, into the grave. And he went into death, he experienced death, he felt death, he died, and in his death, he overcame the grave for us. But as we're excited about that, and we talk about Jesus, you know, destroying death, there's a reality. I mean, you could leave this sermon this morning and say, well, I'm still dying. People are still dying today. I mean, if Jesus destroyed death, then why is death still here? And why are people still dying? And I want to share with you that Jesus destroyed death in the fact that he's the firstborn from the dead. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 20, but now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. And that's not a word we use a lot, the idea of a first fruit. But that's just, you know, if you had a crop and say you made tomatoes this year, which I hope some of you do because might always die. You make tomatoes, and the very first tomato, I mean the best tomato, the one that you've just been so looking forward to, the first one you pick, that's your first fruits, right? That's the first one. And so Jesus is the first fruits of those who are going to rise from the dead, right? He went in, and even though people have died, Jesus was the first one to be raised, never to die again. And so he's the first fruits of those. And it goes on to say that Since by man came death, by man also came the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ all shall be made alive. But each one in his own order. Christ the first fruits, and afterward those who are Christ that is coming. Then comes the end, when he delivers the kingdom to God the Father, and he puts an end to all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign until he puts all enemies under his feet. And the last enemy that will be destroyed is death. And so while Jesus is the first fruit from the dead, he's the first one to do that. Death is still claiming lives today. But that's not the end, right? Jesus' resurrection was not the end of his destruction of death. It signaled the beginning. And there's going to come a day in which Jesus is going to come back and forevermore destroy death once and for all. And he's going to do that by taking the bodies of those of us who died, have died, and will die, and he's going to raise those from the dead. And he's going to put those all back together. And you might say, well, how's he going to do that? What about people that have been incinerated, and people that are dust, and people whose bodies have long since decayed and eaten by animals or drowned in the ocean? How's Jesus going to do that? And those are some of the questions that the Corinthians had as they're struggling with the fact that there can't be a resurrection. This doesn't make sense. But he goes on to explain, it better make sense to you. Christ did the same thing. Came back never to die, and in the same way that Christ came back from the dead, that same power is going to be in us and raise us from the dead. And he goes on to explain, it's very similar to how we do anything. You plant a seed goes into the earth, and it dies, and it comes back as something else. Now, we don't know exactly what we're going to look like. We don't know what we're going to be like. We don't know how everything's going to happen, but you can be certain of this. It is going to happen. And I know that because of one thing. Because Jesus came back. Jesus showed his power over death. And he promised to come back and destroy death once and for all. And when we are raised again in the resurrection after we die, we're going to be just like Jesus. Where death, the second death, that idea of dying again is not going to have any power over us. Like Jesus is going to break the bonds of death, and anyone that death has ever killed, Jesus is going to take them back. Jesus is going to raise them from the dead. Now, the unrighteous are still going to have to face the judgment of God, but Jesus is going to come back and destroy death in that everyone that's ever died is going to be raised again. The righteous to eternal life, and the wicked to eternal punishment. And I just wanted to share that with you this morning because it's such an exciting thought here as you think about Jesus coming back from the dead, is that he came back. And in doing so, he gave me the greatest gift that a man could have. He broke the fear of death that has held man enslaved all their lives. While the rest of the world is running around like crazy right now, trying to avoid death, a Christian has just this eternal perspective that allows me to stare in the face of the finality of death with a certainty that it is not the end for any of us. I want to leave you with this verse in 1 Corinthians 15, and then I'll turn it back over to Matt for a song. When the perishable puts on the imperishable, and the mortal puts on immortality, then shall come to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. I'll read one last verse in verse 57. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. What victory do we have? The victory over death. And then that saying is going to be fulfilled, prophesied in Isaiah, that death will be swallowed up in victory. The thing we all are afraid of, the thing that the world's losing their minds over, we got victory through Jesus. Just grateful for him, grateful for what he's done and the power that he's given to us, and thankful for each one of you. And as we always close every service, this is the most important thing right now, is to have your relationship with God. Because you have your relationship with God, then you have that certainty and that lack of fear. But if you don't have a relationship with God, then let me tell you, when you die, you're going to have a very different experience. And I don't want that for anybody. Neither does God. That's why Jesus came. He came to share in that with you and to experience that for you. And if you want to turn your life over to God, then I want you to do that too, whatever you need to do. All right, Matt, I'll turn it over to you.